remember the afternoon I was working in my office, and TV stations called the church office for a statement. We became aware of the helicopters in the sky. And what a shock to the whole community when we realized what had happened. As you may remember, the days following, we witnessed an uprising of angry, scared, upset people struggling to move on from this. I and my team, I had some students from America working with me at the point, we spent time at the heart of the tension. We went to the Boris Johnson visit. We spent time amongst the heavy police presence, the protesters, the scared, the grieving, the hurting people. And we listened. We listened to everyone. We saw, we heard, and we got involved with the broken hearts. We mingled with them. By this point in this particular post, we had a rather successful Fresh Expressions of Church in the area. It was attracting a lot of locals on a very daily basis. And these locals looked to myself for an answer, for an explanation from God as to why this has happened. They asked that we hold a memorial for Lee Rigby's family and pray for peace. And we held that memorial on the Friday after the event. And then, as I prepared for that, I knew people were going to come who did not know God, but they wanted to know God's take on this. So I began to search with God, well, what on earth should I say? How should I talk to them? What will I say, God? And God said that I should tell them that he knows what such harsh treatments and attacks are like. And I thought about that. Yes, Lord, you were crucified, you were whipped, you felt real pain, you know what that is like. But then God added to my thoughts that day. He said, no, tell them I know what it's like to lose a loved one, a friend, a hero like this. And then it hit me. Yes, Lord, your very good friend, your cousin, John the Baptist, was taken by a brutal king and beheaded, and you grieved him. You wept. You went off to the mountains to be alone and pray about it. It broke your heart. You realistically carried the human pain that everyone's carrying right now. You know exactly how people feel around this event. And that means that God knows how every grieving person on the planet feels. That means he knows what life is really like. So that Friday, I led a memorial to Lee Rigby. It was attended largely by non-church goers, and I was able to lead the memorial on the theme, "This Also Happened to Jesus." That was our title, and it was a real comfort to everyone. And I offered to lead our community in prayer, to pray to a God who knows exactly what we are facing because he has been through it. He'd done it himself. Everyone was touched. It's evident in the Lazarus event. Jesus wept at the people crying around him. It's evident in the fact that Jesus very likely lost his earthly dad at a young age. He knows what it's like. That's why in the gospel reading this morning, he responds as he does. Let's go there in our minds now. Let's imagine the scene. Jesus is going to this little town of Nain. His disciples and a large crowd are all around him. And as he approaches the town gate, the crowd led by Jesus clashes with another large crowd. But this time it's a funeral, and the two crowds meet at the gate. The funeral of a young man. And his poor mother is walking by the coffin, weeping bitterly. Not only has her only son died, but her husband is also dead and buried. And for a woman of the first century, this is quite big trouble. Now, when I come across a funeral, I step back, I let it go by, then I move on, as I'm sure you do as well. But here in the reading, what we just read was that in verse 13, it says, when Jesus saw the lady in tears, his heart went out to her, and he went over and he said, don't cry. King Jesus wanted to get involved. He wanted to stop the pain. Jesus, the most powerful creator, ruler, king of the whole planet. And here he is, walking down the street. He sees a so-called nobody, and his heart breaks for her. Herod and Pilate were in their palaces. But to their thinking, they were too concerned to be with commoners at funerals and all the rest of it. They didn't care less. Yet King Jesus, King of our lives, breaks his heart for this lady. He's full of compassion for her. The reading goes on. It says that Jesus walks over to the coffin. Those carrying it stand still. I imagine the crowd goes silent and the whispers begin. I've seen Jesus before. You know, what's he going to do this time? And Jesus says, young man, I say to you, get up. The young man sits up. He starts talking. He's alive. And Jesus gives him back to his mother. Wow. The widow's situation was serious. She had lost her husband. Her only son was dead. Her last means of support was gone. No welfare, no government to turn to. The crowd of mourners, they would go home. She would be left penniless and alone. She would be an easy prey for swindlers. She would likely be reduced to begging for food. But as Luke repeatedly tells us, this woman is exactly the kind of woman that Jesus came to help, and help her he did. Thank God she met Jesus that day. Because this is what happens when people meet Jesus. When people meet Jesus, their lives become hope-filled beacons of love and of joy. They have an assurance of their sins forgiven. Life to the full. They have life of Jesus Christ. They have life in heaven forever. That was the result of meeting Jesus 2,000 years ago, and it's still the same result today. People meet Jesus, they get changed, transformed, they get a home in heaven, they get forgiven, they get life to the full. That's what happened 2,000 years ago, and it still happens today. And that's why I work as a minister of the good news. That's why I preach the gospel everywhere I go. That's why I make it my very life. And that's why every single church needs to remain or get refocused on evangelism and pioneering new ways of church for the areas we exist in. And that's why we at Sladebrook must be fully and completely focused on knowing that area all around us and giving people whatever it is they need to enable them to find that relationship with Jesus. They are without hope, without love, without joy, without Jesus. And that's just not acceptable. It's not good enough that people would live without Jesus. All across the homes around us here, people are lonely, hurting, addicted, mourning, and unforgiven from their sins. They are without life to the full. Jesus came to give life to the full. And every single person is looking for the same thing. They are looking for a change, a way out. They are looking to be refreshed. And I often find that when you tear conversations apart with anyone at all, rich, poor, whoever they are, at the deep core of that conversation, everyone is asking, where can I get real rest from? Where can I find real love? They may not fully realize it or understand it, but deep in their thoughts, you know, when you make it your job to get to the bottom of someone's conversation, you realize everyone's asking, please tell me where I can get help. All it took was a royal sermon about love, and all the media and all Facebook are saying, is that where it is? Is that where the love is? Everyone's looking, where can I get love? And we were hearing during the week that when Eric went into work during the week, his boss was asking him, is that the answer? And they had a conversation for an hour of evangelism. This is what happens. Everyone's looking for the answer. So here it is. As Christ Church, we need to tell them what it is. We need to tell them the only true way to life, to faith, to God. We need to offer them the only true way, Jesus Christ. I have a very deep, personal understanding of Jesus' words in Matthew 11 and 28 when Jesus said, "Come to me and have rest." I can almost imagine Jesus overlooking a marketplace or a religious place or whatnot, and he sees people everywhere. He sees them tired, fed up, and oppressed by religion. And he looks at them all, filled with compassion for the lives they're living. And he says, "Every one of you, come to me. Get away from all of that. Come and have rest. Let me help from now on." 2,000 years later, those words have the exact same meaning they had that day when Jesus first said them. Imagine Jesus here right now, looking at all of us, or on the steps of Tesco, seeing the people coming in and out, or in the orangery, or wherever else, looking all around him, seeing people tired, fed up, oppressed, and he's still saying the same thing: "Come, let me help, let me give you rest." And when you really let Jesus into your life and do that, you are completely transformed, completely made new. Because when people meet Jesus, their lives are transformed. Sick people, hungry people, scared, troubled, depressed, alcoholics, drug addicts, gang members, and rich people, corrupt business people, cheaters, career-obsessed people, leisure-obsessed people, religious people. This is not just about a bunch of poor people in some troubled area. Jesus said anyone, rich or poor, religious or not, good or bad, who does not believe in him does not have life to the full. So all people from all classes and walks of life are completely transformed and made new by meeting Jesus, just like the story of the widow. Life transformation is the gospel message. And this is the message we have for all the homes in our patch. And we are charged by God to take it to them. Down English Coombe Lane, around Kingsway, the Oval, South Down, Whiteway, Rush Hill. It's our patch, it's our work, it's our focus. And this is where the real live evangelism comes into play. In the 21st century, evangelism has some differences. The message never changes, but the delivery can certainly change. The Apostle Paul told us that. 21st century evangelism has taken roots largely in new initiatives of church. Coffee church, messy church, movie church, bread making church, barbecue church, lunch church are just a few examples. The list goes on and on and on. And the important point to realise here is that the name or the type of initiative was not the utmost most important thing. But when these churches had done research, the important point is that they started an initiative that was fully suited to the unique culture of the homes around them. For example, cafe church is probably the most popular in the country. And every church thinks, "Let's do it." But I've visited quite a few churches who started it and then said, "Actually, it doesn't meet the needs of our area. The culture in the area doesn't like cafe church," and they've had to close it down and start something else. Something that works. It takes each church to know what the homes in the area around us would come to, what they would come and be part of. And you know, the scary part about it is that the only people who can go and find out what they would all come to, what would enable everyone to come to a relationship with Jesus, is you and me. It's us here at church. No one's going to do it for us. It's our job to go out there and find out what people would come to. What would enable them to have a relationship with Jesus Christ? Our job. Of course, new fresh initiatives is not the only evangelism happening. Alpha, mission nights, door to door, inviting friends and work colleagues to church are all still happening. And when done correctly, still working, it's all part of enabling people to be transformed by Jesus. But I want to share with you some examples from my own ministry of new initiatives. As I've said, I worked on the Woolwich housing estate, one of the top 10 most deprived in the United Kingdom at that point. The local church had completely lost any connection with all the locals. The estate was riddled with gangs, guns, drugs and all the rest. And I began my work like much other. I knocked doors, I went to the drug dens, I went to the homeless dens, and I introduced myself. When I was able to convince them I wasn't, I always got accused of being an undercover cop. Every time I went to a drug den, they thought I was an undercover cop. When I was able to convince them I wasn't, I made a lot of good friends. I soon learnt the big need was a service around a good evening weekend meal, as government feeding centres generally operated Monday to Friday, and we needed something at the weekend where we could share the word as well. The service would have to have no books at all. So we started a Sunday tea time service. Tea with a video PowerPoint. Tea church, coffee church, that sort of thing. We launched off and families came in droves to have tea, yes, but during tea, heard the gospel through the videos. So we persevered each week. And we soon reached the point where the people coming started to want to pay attention to what was going on in the videos. So we persevered and engaged. And then we soon reached a point where over half of the people coming wanted to properly listen, engage. So we started having our meal first and then the preach. And guess what? Everyone bar about two people stayed and listened to the gospel after the meal. It gets better. Further down the line, that group then expressed, we want to worship. We want to have songs of worship. So we then started having the meal, then the preach, and then the worship. We now had a fully revived, refreshed church, which had fully reconnected with all the local people, and people were getting saved. People were coming to faith. A bit after that, I was called to work with a church in the middle of the Scottish countryside, dead in some senses. The church at one stage had over 100 people. But again, it had fully lost contact with all the local people. It was down to 6 old ladies. And the job was simple. Come and revive us. They understood that their future was that when they go, the doors would close and it would be sold and become a Tesco's. So they were so keen for revival. Again, I went around all the doors. And I learned that what people were doing with Sunday mornings was heading to the town. And things like Costa and Starbucks were a big pull for them. So, with the blessing of the 6 old ladies, we completely turned the church around. We got rid of all the pews. We put a coffee bar in, IKEA sofas and tables and all the rest of it. We created a full-time cafe church. Guess what? People started to come, slowly, albeit, to us rather than travelling to town. And we slowly began to introduce the big questions, to have discussions and hear the Christian take on them. No one stopped coming or ran away. Everyone stayed because we had slowly done the journey with them. They all stayed and engaged. And in time to come, we started a service for them. And they all stayed, and in time to come, they became Christians. And now that church is a fully revived church running properly. I share one more example. I served on a large Scottish housing area as a community pastor. Again, I started by doing door-to-door and all the usual. I learnt the people who lived there held an extreme importance in education. Local media and newspapers fed into education, education, education. Young people were fully focused in university. Adults were doing degrees on top of their jobs, studying science and maths and all the rest of it. You only find this out by knocking everyone's doors. Atheism had become a very popular way in the area. They like to discuss, to learn, to debate, to lecture. So, I started a church service for weekly debates between atheists and Christians. Over the coffee table, it worked. Both atheists and Christians came, some atheists got saved, and the church went up to a worship service and all the rest of it. It takes each church to individually go out and find out what their area would respond to, what their area would come to. I cannot explain to you enough how much a culture changes between housing areas. We can be so easily fooled into thinking that one city can have a similar culture right throughout. It does not. Every housing area has its own culture, again and again and again. So here we are, Slatebrook, at the very beginning of an incredibly exciting journey to revival and renewal for this church. A journey of being freshly reconnected with all the locals who live around us. And we are going to offer them the exact same thing that we've offered all other churches all across the world. Jesus Christ. And the outcome will be the same as has happened in all the other churches all over the world who have got missional. People saved. People in a relationship with Jesus. People going to heaven. People having life to the full, transformed and changed by Jesus. And it actually is very, very simple. I agree, it's enduring and it's taxing. You have to keep pushing, persevering. But it's really very, very simple. We carry a very simple word. I was talking to someone in the town during the week and who wasn't a Christian, and I was telling him he was bothered by the fact of what he had done in his life. He really couldn't understand that God would forgive him and let it be. He said, it must be more difficult than that, Craig. It has to be difficult. No, it's really very, very, very simple. What we carry is a very simple word. It's up to us to endure with it. The message is simple. God is love. God is compassionate. God will give you life to the full. Salvation. God will save you. And salvation comes out in our gospel reading as well. Because that story, it illustrates what salvation is. And that the whole world was dead in sin, just as that widow's son was dead. But God had compassion on me and you. And he sent Jesus to raise us to life with him. That dead man, he did not earn that second chance in life. He never met Jesus. He didn't do a thing to get it. And we cannot earn our new life in Christ. But we can accept God's gift of life. We can praise God for it and use our lives to do his will. And part of our salvation is that we are saved to serve the kingdom, to help the poor, feed the hungry, visit prisons and whatnot, and bring others to faith. Preach the gospel message, a commandment given to us all. Remember that verse? I've said it before here. Romans 10:13-15. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? It's a very clear commandment from God through Paul. We all must preach. Hence why it is so important to be in a church that is fully focused on preaching to everyone around us. That's why it's so important to leave here with the idea of preaching in your workplaces, schools, universities, neighborhoods, wherever it may be. For all I have to say about church neighborhood evangelism, we must remember that we all have homes to go to, families to go to, neighborhoods to go to. Some of us have other neighborhoods to go to. And we still need to go back to those places really, really believing that what happened to the widow 2,000 years ago still happens today. That if we share this message with people, they will get saved. Former Archbishop Rowan Williams would often say, when you see another human being, you see someone who Jesus took seriously to die for. That means every person out there, no matter who they are, where they've been, what they've done, is someone Jesus died for. And there is no difference between you and them, between me and them. Jesus died for us and the homeless guy on the street, for you and the prisoner, for you and the self-righteous judging neighbor. Jesus died for each of us all the same. And every single one of them, as I've said, is looking for the same thing. They want that change and that rest. But how does it come? It comes by discovering the answer to those big questions which I put Catholic Church in Scotland together for. How can we discover the answer to the big questions? And the thing about it is, we Christians have the answer to life. We have the answer to the big questions. Jesus Christ is the answer. He is the creator of all. Listen, if he really is, which I believe, he is the wise designer behind all of creation, behind the rotation of the globe, behind seasons coming and going, night and day. He created the human body. He designed the heart to pump it. And he gave us all free will and real love. He designed the human mind. That would then mean that he really, really, really is the final and only answer to every single thing on the universe. So go out with confidence. We have it. You have it, I have it, and we can use it to see people all around us changed, transformed, and brought into brand new relationships with Jesus. And when you really get that in your mind, you will want to go out and tell it. You will want to go out and spread it. But sometimes I wonder, you know, do we really have a conviction? Do we really believe it? If your mate has a blinding headache and you have a paracetamol in your pocket, do you keep quiet? I don't. I give it to them. I want them to feel better. If your mates and your families are not in relationships with Jesus Christ, they are in need of God's forgiveness, His presence, His strength, and His joy. We have something so much greater than any drug can do. We have Jesus Christ. You and I have the answer to life. And if we share it with people, they will be changed and brought into a relationship with Jesus as well. And that's why I've brought you to Luke chapter 7 this morning. Because it's a real life account of Jesus changing lives. And we need to help bring people to Jesus as well. Look what happened when the man in the reading met Jesus. When he was raised back to life. Verse 16 says, the whole town was praising God. Let's show this area Jesus changing people. Tell them how He changed us. And we too could see that verse 16 here. This place filled with people praising God. But that's the bigger long-term vision. If I leave you with any challenge for right now, in the immediate week ahead, it is this. What are you doing to share Jesus Christ with the people around you, wherever you are in the country? What are you doing to tell them your faith, wherever you are? It strikes me that when Jesus met this widow, He completely restored her in every single way. He restored her physical condition. She had a son who could work and bring an income in. He restored her inner condition. Her broken heart was mended. And He healed her spiritual condition as He enabled her to have faith in God, as He does for us. But what strikes me even more is that neither her nor her son had to do anything to be helped or blessed by Jesus. They just seen Him offering His gift of help and they took it. And when they took it, they really embraced it. Remember verse 16? They were all praising and worshipping God. Transformation is the gospel message. And the gospel of Luke, where we read from today, has countless stories of Jesus changing lives. Luke shows us that Jesus was and is deeply interested in every individual human and our problems. Deeply interested in our problems. And we today who have faith, we're still reporting all over the world that Jesus is still doing the same stuff today. So I challenge, what are you doing to share Jesus with those around you, wherever you are? Prayer, our church, our mission, our focus, our patch. Who's going to lock the doors around here? Who's going to talk to people around here and find out what they would come to? How they would respond to Jesus? It's our job. Amen.